This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
The future Hall of Famer, a famer, and Super Bowl champion with the Giants, our buddy Michael Strahan, now doing great work on TV at Fox. How are you, Michael?
Hey, I'm great, you guys. How you guys doing?
We're doing well, Michael, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Certainly the topic all around the sports world is the situation with Ben Roethlisberger. Michael, and I want to get your perspective on something Herman Edwards just said. You know, no one defends what Ben Roethlisberger is alleged to have done and all of that, but Herm seemed offended by the idea that the team would just turn its back on a guy now, when the reality is they've probably known for some time that he had some issues, but now when it becomes public and it becomes an embarrassment, they want to wash their hands of the situation. As you sort of watch this thing play out, what's your perspective?
I think teams want to win. And then when people find out what the cost of winning is, then all of a sudden, well, we didn't know that. I think that Ben's situation is unique in a sense that he's been accused of two incidents, both similar within the last 8 months, yet hasn't been convicted of anything, but it's more of a judgment. It's more of a he said, she said. And if you look at it from a public perspective, you look and you go, wow, this guy has a lot of issues. And you can see why Roger Goodell handed out the penalty that he did. I think it just shows that he's not going to tolerate anybody who makes the NFL's brand look bad, that team look bad, or anything like that. And you have to, as a player and as a person, be accountable for your actions and where you put yourself and what situations you put yourself in. And I think that's the message here.
How should the Pittsburgh Steelers handle this going forward?
You know, I think if anything, you should support him. If you really want that guy on your team for all he's done for that organization, then you should support him. If he needs any some kind of counseling or help or anything, even if he goes, I don't need it, these things are false, you know what? Then you need to at least step in and say, hey, we want to be a guy. We want to help you. This is what we feel like you need to do, and this is what we will accept for you to do in order to be a part of this football team and be more in a mentoring stage and more of a helping stage instead of just saying, well, you know, you're suspended by the league and that's it. We don't really want anything to do with you.
That's similar to what Herman was saying. Mike and Michael Strahan. You know, what's interesting, Michael, you were in the NFL an awful long time before Roger Goodell and the personal conduct policy and after. And Mike Golic here says to me all the time, players are very good at saying that won't happen to me. To what degree do you think players around the NFL are getting the message of how seriously this sort of conduct is being taken by the commissioner?
Oh, if you're in the league right now, and you better not even step on an ant in the street. He might suspend you for that. I mean, Roger Goodell is not joking. He takes the brand very seriously, takes his job very seriously, and he understands that you represent so many other people in such a big company, that he's not going to let one person, no matter how many Super Bowls you won, no matter how successful you've been on the field, what's your name, he's not going to let that affect the brand. And if you're a current player, you look and you think, I need to conduct myself in the proper manner. And everyone says it's not going to happen to me, but there are those situations or those days where it possibly can. But I think you need to surround yourself with the right people if you can. You need to be careful where you go. You need to understand you're not a normal, you know, citizen that can walk up and down the street without anybody recognizing or knowing who you are, and you need to always have that in the back of your mind.
Do you think the majority of players in the NFL are saying, good, we're happy he's putting his foot down, or they're saying, boy, he's really putting his foot down too hard on people?
Well, if you had to play against the Steelers the first 6 weeks, you're probably like, well, good, okay, I'm glad he did that. But, you know, I think a lot of players, we accept what he does in a lot of ways, because you look and you go, okay, that's what it is. Now I know the guidelines of what I can and can't do. You see what he's, it's weird. Whenever a player gets in trouble like that, in the locker room is never really mentioned. When, you know, guys just kind of go about their business, that's like your haven against anything that happens on the outside world. All the outside problems stay outside that locker room. And so, you know, I think the players are looking and saying, what can we do to win as a team? We know Ben's not going to be here. I don't think you're going to see any players who are crying over it. They just have to move on. That's what you're taught.
Mike and Michael Strahan, who is one of my favorites, not only because he was a great player, but because he is truly a metrosexual. Yeah. He is much more like me than he is like you. And he keeps telling you, Golic, about how you need to concern yourself with your skin. And Michael Strahan knows exactly how to do it.
Hey, Golic, have you started to use lotion, man?
I'm not into it like
Michael,
you guys.
Michael, listen to me, okay?
Hey, Golic, you know, this is a shame, man. Honestly, because you realize the flakes from your skin could get stuck in Mike's throat and cause him to not be able to talk, and then there goes the show.
This is exactly right.
I mean, man, honestly, Vaseline men, Mike Golic, this is from me to you. This is from my heart, okay?
Yeah.
This is like an intervention. Vaseline men has a line, man. It's just for us. It dries in 15 seconds. It hydrates you. They even have a cooling hydration body lotion. You put it on, has a little menthol in it. It cools the skin. So perfect for you in the summer, because I know you kind of like, oh, I'm hot. Put this on, just go, you just want to relax. Your wife will rub up on you and be like, baby. Your kids will run up and be able to sit on your lap and not get away and need Band-Aids and stuff. I mean, come on, Mike. Get some. I'm going to send you some Vaseline Men Fast Absorbing Lotion. 15 seconds, you'll be dry, you'll be supple, and your family will be happier.
That's what Golic needs. He needs to be more supple.
What's the problem with the lotion? Why don't you use lotion? I'm just curious.
Well, now that you are talking about it, maybe, but when Greeny talks about it, I just can't do something that he does because I would feel unmanly. But knowing you do it, I think maybe now I can.
Well, do me a favor. I'll send it to the house. Don't even let Greeny know you got it. Sneak it and put it on.
There you go.
You know, he may notice you smell good, but other than that.
Thank you, Michael.
Right. Just shake his hand. He'll know your hands are soft.
You're the best. Thanks, Michael Strahan. See you soon.
Thank you, guys.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Herman Edwards is back with us here, longtime NFL player, longtime NFL coach now, our very own here at ESPN, and has some very interesting perspective on all this going on. For those just joining us, we just had David Cornwell, the attorney for Ben Roethlisberger, on the program. Herm, you've been watching all this play out over months and certainly the last day or two. What do you make of it all?
Well, I look at it this way, as a coach and as a guy that's been in the league for 30 years and understands about protecting the shield. I agree with the commissioner with the suspension of Ben. I think the commissioner's doing a great job of trying to clean the league up and keep the integrity of the game intact. And no player is bigger than the game. No coach is bigger than the game. I get all that. But what I don't get is rumors about Ben being traded. That's where I kind of differ with this being said. Obviously, he has a problem. No one knows what that is right now. This just didn't come about. When the Pittsburgh Steelers won two Super Bowl trophies and they were holding him up and everyone's kissing the trophy and everyone's hugging and crying and all that good stuff, he probably had those problems. But maybe publicly they went out there and we kind of turned away from it. We didn't help him then.
The team, you're saying?
Yeah. And the league. I mean, even the league knows. I mean, you know, that's why you have player programs guys on your football team to find these things out, to find out what's going on in the locker room. So with that being said, what we're really saying now is because publicly it's out there and he's had some things in the past that have come up. We want to trade the guy. Well, it's kind of like we preach the team as a family. Well, when your son gets a DUI and wrecks the car, you take him to the adoption agency and say, well, I don't want my son anymore. Hmm. And so I'm looking at it like that as a coach. And if I'm the coach, I'm asking ownership, hey, let me help this guy. Because when you start getting rid of players, and I'm okay, if that's the rule, if that's the hard and fast rule now, I get it. There's a 53-man roster on every team. It won't be that anymore in the National Football League. It'll probably be around 43. Because you got players in that locker room that have issues. We all have issues in life. And you can discard all the issues and say, well, I don't want to deal with it. But that's kind of part of the deal, too. I mean, I'm good enough to win games for you. But when it gets a little rocky, and I've embarrassed you, I've embarrassed the shield, I've embarrassed myself, my mom, my dad, now what? Do you help me, or do you get rid of me and let the next team help me? That's what's in question.
Okay, let's explain this a little bit now, because of the public things that happened last year and this year, people will say, well, that just happened now, Herm, so how could they know their issues? So now, take us to, as you said, you've been in the league for 30 years. You've been a head coach. So talk about how much is known of things even before they go public about players and that you have to know about.
Trust me. Trust me. You played in the league. I played in the league. We sat in those locker rooms as players. I walked in that locker room as an assistant coach, a head coach. I made it my business to understand what players have issues. Those are the guys that you continually reach out to. Every team has some players with some issues. We got people in life, people have issues. I get it. I don't condone anything with Ben. Believe me, I got two daughters. I don't condone anything that Ben did at all. Not one bit. I know this. If you socially go out and drink, you better know the pitch count. You better know the pitch count. It's up to you to know the pitch count. When it's the next one is one too many, you better go to the bullpen. Time to get out. Because you make mistakes, and generally in our league, nothing good happens after 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol-related incidents, guess what? You can't control your emotions when you start having too many, and bad things happen.
Mike and Mike, Herman Edwards is in our studio. So, if a situation like this, and by the way, Herm practices what he preaches. I mean, I remember an instance involving a very high-profile player in John Abraham who you suspended for a game when you were the coach of the Jets. So this sort of thing has come up. If you were the coach in Pittsburgh right now, what are you doing?
Well, I'm trying to convince the ownership that, hey, I want to help this guy. Let's give him one more shot. It's up to me to help him. It's up to us to help him. And if not, let's say the ownership is just fed up. They said, we're going to get rid of this guy. Well, then I'm going to tell him, look, I need a veteran quarterback. Let's don't just train for a draft choice. Let's call some teams and see if we can flop quarterbacks. First one I would call, Washington Redskins.
For Donovan, huh?
Sure. Why not? All they can say is no.
Yeah.
But they might say yeah.
But you're right. Get a guy now because what's on their roster right now, they're not winning.
I want to win right now.
Right.
If I'm the head coach.
Would you agree with what they have on their roster without Ben? They're not winning.
And I believe those guys are good players, but I want a guy that's been through it, that started games, that can play right now.
Some would say Leftwich could be that guy. I don't think so anymore.
He's had a bunch of chances. He hadn't done it yet.
Yeah.
Herman Edwards is in our studio. I just want to make sure I fully understand what you're saying. What you're saying is too often in life, in football, but everywhere, we are willing to overlook things in the good times, but you really find out who people are in the bad times.
Absolutely. You find out about your integrity. You know, we preach integrity, and I get that. I believe in that. There's a code of ethics I believe by. His priorities are screwed up right now. You got to help him with his priorities. His moral values are a little bit tainted. I get that part. I don't agree with any of it. I think it's horrible what happened. But I think when you look at players, there's things that happen that don't come out that we kind of go, okay, we'll call the guy in and we'll get the guy. You know. But now this has become a big issue, and there's a lot of emotion in it. Pittsburgh Steelers, great organization. Great fans. I get it. They're mad at Ben. We're all mad at him. We're disappointed in the guy. But somebody's going to help him. If he goes to another team, some team has to help this guy. Why don't we try to help him first? And if it doesn't work out, guess what? We could trade him. We could get rid of him. But don't do it on emotion. This is my opinion. That's my opinion.
And always valid and always welcome here. Thank you so much, Herman.
Vinny Serrato, former player personnel man with the Washington Redskins, San Francisco 49ers, now part of the ESPN team, and he joins us now via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Vinny, kind of different working a draft from this side of the microphone. What's it been like for you getting ready for this draft as an analyst as opposed to a guy that's going to be making selections?
Well, I tell you what, one of the things is I've been watching all the film, you know, at my house, so it's been, you know, where I've had a lot of time, no interruptions, so I've got a chance to really analyze. I think I've been really a better evaluator on tape just because I've had the time and no interruptions where you're not running here, running there, where nobody bothers me. I can sit there on my big 73-inch screen and watch the tape and evaluate it. And I think, you know, I've done at least, you know, 155 guys.
If you were the guy that was sitting there with the number one overall pick, who would you take?
Sam Bradford.
Would there be any doubt in your mind? Is that clear to you?
Nope. Totally, very crystal clear, as they would say. And I like the size of Sam. I like his accuracy. I like his arm strength. He'd have been the number one pick the year before, in my mind.
Is he the kind of guy, when you look at him on tape, Vinny, where you get excited and you say to yourself, that guy's going to be my quarterback?
Yeah, I think, he's going to be the face of my franchise. He's going to be my quarterback. And the only thing I wish he was, I wish he was a little more vocal leader. You know, he's kind of a quiet guy. I wish he was a little bit more vocal, and maybe that'll come, you know, as he's around the Rams more and around the city more and around the team more.
Some of the other quarterbacks that you have looked at, and people have talked a lot about Jimmy Clausen being kind of a wild card in that first round. They've talked about Colt McCoy. Of those three, we already know how you feel about Bradford. How do you like the other two guys?
I really like Jimmy Clausen, too. I think, you know, he's a guy that's matured. I did a lot of homework on him, too, you know, when I was with the Redskins. And I like Jimmy Clausen. I actually like the way he plays. He wants the ball at the end of the game. I mean, four times on the last drive, he won the games. So I like that in Jimmy. And I tell you what, don't be shocked if, say, St. Louis doesn't trade back, maybe to Cleveland or something like that, and St. Louis takes Jimmy Clausen and Sam still goes one. You know, I can see that they, I know they like Jimmy Clausen, St. Louis. I think they like his personality, and I think that Spag, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, the head coach of the Rams, I think he likes that type of attitude, and I think he likes his playing personality.
Talking to Vinny Serrato, he's part of our ESPN draft coverage. Of course, spent many years as the player personnel guy and front office man at the Washington Redskins. Before that, was with the San Francisco 49ers. And when we talk about quarterbacks that are coming up in this draft, there is an enigmatic guy in Tim Tebow, and people don't quite know what to make of him because he ran such a different offense and did things a little bit of a different way at Florida. We know that he likes that every one of his teammates loves him, would go to bat for him. We know that he wins a lot of football games. What kind of NFL arc do you see Tim Tebow's career taking?
Well, I think he's got a good NFL arm. I just don't think he has an NFL release right now. And I think it's going to take him some time to develop that NFL release. And I've said on a number of shows, ESPN shows today, that I think the quarterback guru coaches, you know, that are offensive-minded head coaches, want to prove that they can make a quarterback out of Tim Tebow. And I think that you've got to think that, you know, with the type of work ethic and the type of guy that Tim Tebow is, you got to be on his side and figure that he can do it, but how long will it take him to accomplish that? Because I think he needs a full preseason. I think he needs live game action to show that he doesn't revert back to his old throwing motion. And I think he needs game action to work that throwing motion through. So I think it'll take him a year for sure, you know, 1 year for sure, maybe two, to take developmental time. But he's smart, he's tough, he'll work at it, so the odds are that he'll get it.
Vinny Serrato, part of our NFL draft coverage. Tomorrow night begins at 7 p.m. Eastern. It's actually later Thursday night, depending on how you're looking at the middle of the night right now. But then rounds 2 and 3 on Friday night, beginning at 6 p.m., he'll be along with Freddie Coleman and John Clayton. He's joining us here on All Night. Earlier today, there was a report by a couple of our reporters, Vinny, that the Pittsburgh Steelers had actually at least initiated conversations and made phone calls with teams who are in the top 10 about whether they'd even be interested in talking about a trade for Ben Roethlisberger. My question tonight is, what surprises you more, that Pittsburgh would make those calls or that nobody seems interested in making a deal for him at this point?
To me, I think more the fact that nobody is interested in making that deal because, you know, I mean, you look at Jay Cutler went for 2 ones and Kyle Orton, and he was a Pro Bowl quarterback at 25. And you have Ben Roethlisberger, who's 28 years old, won 2 Super Bowls, and, you know, is a franchise quarterback, knows how to win games, can win games. And so that, you know, kind of shocks me more that there's not more interest in Ben. I would think that if they could replace Ben with a franchise-type quarterback, they would definitely listen to that offer, you know, whether it be a top pick, and players, I would think it would be more than just a top 10 pick. I wouldn't think that Pittsburgh would do it for just a top 10 pick. I would think there would have to be a lot more involved because he's so young and been so productive and won so many games.
So it could be that we just don't know what the terms are, and the price tag might be so high that other teams just won't want to go there, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I would think that. I would think people will call. I think they'll get calls, and then Pittsburgh will say, we've got it. What are you thinking? And they'll say, oh, we'll give you a top 10 pick. And they'll say, okay, and what else?
Yeah.
You know, that's not enough. Jay Cutler went for 2 ones and Kyle Orton, you know, and some more change in there. But, you know, if you just want to do that, it's not worth Pittsburgh doing that, because I think they give him, you know, one more chance. He's going to miss 4 to 6 games, probably 4, and then he comes back and plays, you know, 12 games in the playoffs, you know, and hopefully he gets his act together, gets his life straightened out, you know, off the field and on the field. So, I would think that it'll take a steep price to get him out of Pittsburgh. I don't think it would be just for one pick. That is not, that wouldn't be the Pittsburgh's benefit, I wouldn't think.
Vinny, you've spent so much time on the other side of, of these drafts. We can all talk about what's going to happen in the top 10 picks and who you would take, and we all know those players. They're high-profile college players. How much work goes into making sure you make the right picks once it gets to rounds 3 through 7?
Well, I mean, that's totally critical. Basically, you've got to have a solid board, and that takes a lot of work. You know, it takes the scouts being out all year. It takes a lot of meetings with the coaches, scouts, evaluating film, putting your board together, ranking each position, putting them, you know, in a top 150, 1 to 150, and then you just follow the board. And what you do when you're in rounds 3 to 7, what you're doing is on your board, if there's a guy that you still have as a second round grade and he's still sitting there and you're in round 3, that's where you get value for your pick. You know, so that's kind of, if you follow your board, follow the value, don't take by need, take by value, then there's a good chance that you're going to get some players that are going to make your team and benefit your team down the road.
Hey, Vinny, one more thing I wanted to get your thoughts on. This seems to be a very heavy draft for offensive linemen who are so valuable, obviously, in the National Football League. How do you evaluate the first-round talent for offensive linemen in this year's draft?
Well, I would say this. I would say there's a, you know, Russell Okung, I think, from Okie State, has the least amount of holes. And then I think all the other old linemen have some type of holes. You know, he may only be a right tackle, or he may have, you know, injury issues, or he may have character issues. And the other guy I think that has no holes is Marquise Pouncey, the center from Florida. I think no holes, and I think he goes in the teens. You know, I think Ayupati, you know, has some holes. I think he's talented. I think he'll go in the first round. There's a lot of other guys that'll go in the first round, but they have more holes than those guys. And what you want to do when you're drafting in the first round is you want to get the guy with the least amount of red flags that you can get, because the bigger the chance of success for the longer amount of time.
Vinny Serrato, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us here. We're looking forward to seeing you, actually hearing you, and John Clayton, and, of course, Freddie Coleman tomorrow night in our coverage of the 2010 NFL Draft here on ESPN Radio. Thanks so much for stopping by.
I'll tell you what, we're about 24 hours, and we can't wait.
Here's Adam Schefter, the NFL insider and maybe the busiest man in America today. Schefter, before we get to Roethlisberger and all of that stuff, work with me on Golic here a little bit on this topic. Could the Rams trade the number one pick if they wanted to? Meaning, it's a question of price. Would the Redskins, under the right circumstances, or the Browns, under the right circumstances, or someone else, be willing to go up there and take Bradford if the price were not too high?
Well, it's a great question. My short answer would be, no, it's not going to happen, because we haven't heard a hint of anything. Now, again, yesterday morning, we're on the show, and we're talking about how the suspension's coming down, and I think the 6-game surprised everybody to a certain extent. So these things change fast, but the way I understand it right now is Sam Bradford is going to be the number one pick of the St. Louis Rams today. He's going to play quarterback in that city. They've passed up Matt Ryan 2 years ago. They passed up Joe Flacco 2 years ago. They passed up Mark Sanchez last year. How many times can you go pass up a franchise quarterback when some of your previous number one picks have included Adam Carriker and Damian Lewis and Jimmy Kennedy and Chris Long? At what point do you have to draft the most important position on any football team? And I think that's today.
Are you hearing about any possible trades within the top 5 picks, or most of the guy people think it's going to happen in the area of 10, 11, 12? Do you see anything maybe happening earlier than that?
I think Washington is interested in moving back if they can find a team that is willing to move. But so far, that has not been the case. They're not able to find a trade partner. Detroit's going to take, I think, Sue. Tampa Bay's going to take Gerald McCoy. And the first real question of this draft is Washington. And I know the entire world and the entire universe has them taking an offensive tackle. And all I will say is I'll not so sure about that.
Adam Schefter, yeah, go ahead. Schefter, not so sure about the Redskins at four.
Yeah, no, I just think that it's the obvious pick, and I think that they have some things up their sleeve is my guess.
Mike and Mike, so that leaves a couple of quarterbacks in play. One of them is Ben Roethlisberger. We'll deal with him in a minute. The other one is Jimmy Clausen. Where is he going to wind up?
Great question. And I went through this yesterday in our draft preparation meeting room with Mel Kiper and John Gruden, and we were talking about this. And I personally see Jimmy Clausen sliding. And I see him sliding farther than people thought. Now, the interesting part about this is I also think that there are going to be at least three and quite possibly four quarterbacks going in the first round of the draft. I think somebody is going to trade up to go get Colt McCoy at the back end of the first round. I think that could be Cleveland. I think Buffalo, if it doesn't use pick number nine on the biggest upset of the first round of the draft on Tim Tebow, is going to make a play into the back part of the first round to try to get Tim Tebow. And now you're left with the question of Jimmy Clausen and where he goes. And as unimaginable as it is and as unthinkable as it could be, I could see a fit at Minnesota at number 30. Now you say, well, there's no way he's getting to 30. Well, if he's getting past Seattle and San Francisco in the teens, then you tell me where he's going. And at that point, it could be, once he slides past Seattle and San Francisco, which I sense he's going to but don't know that he will, but if he does, then it could be a team like Carolina trading up into the 20s, which doesn't have a one, to go get Jimmy Clausen if it likes him, and I don't know that it does. Or it just could be that Jimmy Clausen keeps going and going and going to number 30 to Minnesota, which would be a great situation for him.
You mentioned past San Francisco. They have two early picks, 13 and 17. So if you're saying if he slid past there, he could slide even farther. Okay, how about to Ben Roethlisberger and trade rumors out there? First, I guess the first thing, are they actively trading him, or is this a message being sent to Ben and the fans that's saying, hey, we're trying to trade him, when in reality they're not going to trade him?
It's a great question, and I don't think the Rooneys do things to send messages. I just don't think they do that. I think that they're honorable, upstanding people that go to get things done. They're direct. They're not disingenuous. They're not misleading. So I'm more of the mind that they have been shopping him. Now, since we talked about this on ESPN yesterday, what I've come to find out is the teams that you would think would make a move on him are not going to make a move on him. He's not going to wind up in Buffalo. He's not going to wind up in Oakland. He's not going to wind up in Jacksonville. And so I've been able to cross off teams from my list. Now, you're looking at a scenario. Would they trade him in the division to Cleveland? Would Cleveland be interested? I think that's the bigger question, is that what I have sensed is that teams view Ben Roethlisberger as being radioactive the same way that teams once viewed Michael Vick as being radioactive. And I almost sense right now that Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers are stuck with each other. That's my sense. Now, somebody could decide before today's draft, you know what, let's go trade our first-round pick to Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh could be inclined to do that. Let's say this. I believe that Pittsburgh is open to dealing Ben Roethlisberger. Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know that they can get anything that's going to make it worth their while, and I don't know that they can find a team that actually really wants him right now.
A fascinating turn of events. Someone who might be, if Golic is right, and all of this will, to at least some degree, be lessened, if not forgotten, by the time the season starts and you live through a 4 or 6 game suspension, now someone right now could be getting a franchise quarterback, Mike, for a mid-first round pick and deciding not to do it. It is an amazing set of circumstances. Schefter, stay close, okay? Anything happens, you give us a call.
Guys, I'm here for anything. Have a great day. It's going to be an unbelievable night. 32 picks. Can't wait to see how it goes.
Absolutely. There's Adam Schefter, as good as it gets.
Charles Barkley was the only guy, and bless him for this. You know, when LeBron scores 40 and does one-on-one in the corner of the court, everybody fell in love with him. My argument is, you're not beating the Lakers that way. You're not beating Orlando, and I love Orlando, but you're not beating Orlando that way. And Barkley came out and said similarly, he didn't fall in love with him, he didn't like it. And Charles is joining us. I contend Orlando's gonna beat him. And I know everybody thinks I'm nuts. I think Orlando beats him and beats him quickly. How do you think Cleveland-Orlando match up?
I think it's going to be a knockdown, drag-out, great series. I'm going to pick Cleveland to win, but I think if they keep playing like they're playing, it's like they plan the same way when there was a one-man team 3 years ago. They still play the same way today. They got better players. They got Mo Williams, who's a heck of a player. They got Shaq, who's still solid in the middle. And they got Jamison. But they still just let LeBron go 1-on-5. And the thing me and Ernie talked about the other night, Ernie says he just had a great game. I said, they beat the Chicago Bulls in the first round of the playoffs. They're not trying to beat the Bulls. First of all, if they play like that, they're going to have a tough time beating the Celtics in the second round of the playoffs. But they won't beat Orlando or they won't beat the Lakers if they go 1-on-5 all night long. Those shots LeBron were making, those are the shots you want him to take.
Oh, yeah. Here's another thing, Charles. I believe that because of Phil Jackson's success, he doesn't coach out of fear. He takes risks. I think Mike Brown and that entire city is petrified of losing LeBron. In the fourth quarter a couple years ago against the Spurs, they didn't go to LeBron. He was more of an assist guy. Brown got killed for it. Do you think sometimes Mike Brown coaches out of fear for not giving the ball to LeBron?
I think he's very conservative. And I'm going to reiterate what I just said. They got more parts than they had 3 or 4 years ago when LeBron was really a one-man team. But he don't use them enough. When you get more weapons, you use the weapons. You don't just play the same way. And it'll help LeBron, because LeBron will get more layups. It's hard to go 1-on-5 every single night against a really good team. And if they keep playing like that, they won't beat the good teams. I still picked them to win the whole thing. But that was the first time I was concerned watching game two.
Charles Barkley is joining us. TNT coverage of the NBA playoffs. 7 Eastern tonight with Ernie Seaweb, Cavs, Bulls, Lakers, Thunder. I think the Thunder beat the Lakers soundly tonight. It's interesting. And listen, we all know the Lakers, the Celtics, Spurs, little older team. But when I watched the Thunder in game two, I thought, wow, L.A. can look really good and really slow. Is there a shot that the Thunder even this series and win the two home games?
No, I think the Lakers are going to sweep them because I think that they're too young. I think you see Kevin Durant is really struggling. You know, first of all, he started out arguing with Phil Jackson last week. That was my first sign of concern when you addressed him. You know, first of all, Phil Jackson is a master manipulator. So when he answered Phil Jackson, I said, uh-oh, now he's trying too hard. But I think that the Lakers will sweep them. I think all the games will be close and competitive. But I will say this. Between Oklahoma City and Chicago, you better beat them now because they're going to be kicking some butt in the next few years. Both of those teams have done a terrific job. I love Oklahoma City for the future, and I love what the Bulls are doing with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and a bunch of role players. You better get those two teams right now because they're going to be bringing it in the next 3 or 4 years.
Charles Barkley joining us, The Herd on ESPN Radio. If you've never had a problem talking about major issues in the Big Ben story, I have not heard your comments on it. I'm all for rigid parenting and rigid disciplinarianship from the commissioner. 6 games was fine with me. Was it fine with you?
Well, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, Colin, to be honest with you. My concern is, you saw, and I hate to bring other people's dirty laundry up, I think that you saw the guy from the Colts who got accused of sexual assault. I think his name was Foster.
Mm-hmm.
I read that in the paper yesterday. My concern is, I like Roger Goodell, and I think clearly we need somebody who, he's not David Stern, I might add, but I don't understand how he gets to pick and choose, get to be judge, jury, and executioner. Is he going to suspend the guy from the Colts for 6 games because he got accused of sexual assault? And I take sexual assault very seriously because I have a daughter. But, you know, you go back to the Duke situation, and I just worry about him getting to suspend guys when there's no charges. I truly believe that. I do. I worry about him getting to suspend guys when there's no charges. That concerns me.
What about the fact that it was the second time in a year, basically the same charges?
I agree that has something to do with it, but like I say, guys could get accused of that. You know, last year, you know, remember when Junior Seau got accused of something? And if, you know, it could, like I say, it's a very tough call. And I take sexual assault or rape, whatever words you want to use, I take it very seriously. But it still comes down to a he said, she said situation. And I just think you have to really be careful when you have to make that choice when you're going to hammer people. And I thought he was caught in a really awkward situation on the race issue. Because I was a little concerned with all the pundits, I call them pundits, on TV talking about they have to suspend Ben because he suspended all these black guys. My first response would be, well, tell the black guys to quit committing crimes. But also, I don't want no racial justice. I want every case to be looked at on its own merits. But it was so funny, and I'm not hammering these two guys. It was so funny. I've never seen so many guys defend Pac-Man Jones and Michael Vick as I have in the last month. You know, but and Pac and Vic, I wish them nothing but the best. But it's so funny. This is not, we got two black guys, we've been penalizing these black guys, we've got to get a white guy. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I want what Ben did to stand on his own merits.
Charles Barkley joining us. Game 3, Cavs, Bulls, and Lakers, Thunder. And by the way, he likes the Lakers to sweep the Thunder. He is joining us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. You know, it's interesting. We've been talking about morals, and you're an interesting guy for this because you've had your ups and downs. I tend to, on the radio, if guys want to be moralists, get into political radio, lean right, fine with me. That's not how I believe sports. You're taking kids socioeconomically from tough backgrounds. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to get rich at 21. It's not a perfect world. Would you, let's say Ben is convicted of something, one of the two charges. Do you trade him or do you realize it's pro sports and you got to keep your stars?
Well, I think it depends on the crime. I don't think in any case whatsoever you ever put your hand on a woman. To me, that's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big domestic abuse guy. If you put your hand on a woman, you should automatically go to jail, period. Now, a sexual assault thing, if you get convicted, that's a really terrible thing, and I think you probably got to go. You know, my thing is, Colin, hey, man, athletes are going to make mistakes just like every day. There's a lot more regular people in jail than jocks. There's a lot more regular people in jail than jocks. But, you know, we're just in a 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
And if you screw up today, you're going to be on CNN and ESPN. That's just how it is. It ain't right. It ain't wrong. That's just how it is. You're just going to have to get beat down for a while.
Yeah. Charles, always a pleasure. You're a busy guy. You take time for us about once every month. We'll see you on TNT with Ernie and C-Web and the boys tonight.
All right, man. You on Sports Nation today?
Yes, I am, Charles. I am on Sports Nation with a terrific Michelle Beadle.
I'll be watching, man. Tell the Beatle out to Chuck to say hello.
I will.
All right, man. Keep up the great work, Colin.
All right. Thanks, Charles.
Okay.
A former member of the San Antonio Spurs, Bruce Bowen. And, Bruce, the question I've got to ask you is, yesterday in the off day, Mavericks owner Mark Cuban comes out and he says, I hate the Spurs. And he talks about how he respects the Spurs and he respects Tim Duncan, but he says, here's the owner saying, I hate the Spurs. Now, from your perspective, do players just get amused by that, or do they care about that one way or the other?
Well, I don't think it's that they really care about it too much, but it is a slap in the face. They look at it from a standpoint of, okay, you hate us? Well, we respect you, and we respected you ever since we've been playing. So being that we do have that respect for you, we can really show you how we respect you by whooping up on you.
He did point out that he does respect the team. That he respects Tim Duncan.
You can't hate a team and respect them at the same time. It's like mixing oil and water. It just doesn't mix.
Now, how much of that, though, is the owner of a product trying to generate some real interest and some rivalry with you guys?
Well, the rivalry is there. It has nothing to do with the owner, per se. But I think sometimes Mark tends to overstep his boundaries as a owner, because what he's doing is the interviews and things like that. Those are for the players and the coaches. So being that he does those things because he loves the game of basketball and he wants to be involved, but he's an owner. You stay back, you let your players and your coaches do all the interviews and things of that nature.
Bruce, talk to me a little bit about the Lakers. Yeah, they're up 2-0. They win both of their games at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But Oklahoma City played them tough, played them right down to the line. A lot of people were worried about the Lakers coming into this postseason, saying they weren't really hitting their stride. They hadn't played all that well. How concerned are you with the way the Lakers have played, and how optimistic are you that Oklahoma City might be able to turn this series around on their home court?
Well, the fact that the Oklahoma City Thunder have played well in L.A., if they can get that same type of play at home, I think those are victories for them. So, if anything, the Lakers really need to worry about coming out and establishing an early tone for that game. And, you know, you don't want this game to end up being tied, because now you only give that young group more excitement, more energy, and more confidence that they can actually beat you.
Bruce, were you surprised in that Denver-Utah series that as banged up and shorthanded as Utah was, that they win game two in Denver and just push the Nuggets to the very extreme?
Well, I wasn't surprised because of this. The Denver Nuggets has shown that they don't have the mental capacity just yet to follow up on playing well night in and night out. You have one game where they look fantastic, then another game where they kind of float through things and think that they can turn a switch on and off. What I was impressed with was how Deron Williams established himself within that team, within the whole setting in Denver, saying, okay, fellas, he's going to be more aggressive, but not in a selfish manner. He was aggressive in a manner where it got everyone involved, and thus they came out with a good victory.
Anything in the other series that has really impressed you at this point in time? Cleveland continues to win, but they're taking mammoth efforts from LeBron James. Does that bother you down the road for Cleveland? They're playing a first-round number 8 seed, and they're needing Herculean efforts by LeBron to get through?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's Herculean efforts. It's he got into a rhythm and was able to just take advantage of the things that Chicago was offering him in the first game, whereas in the first game he was doing too much watching to see, to try to figure out, and he wasn't being proactive. But whenever you have an all-star and future MVP of this season have him second-guessing himself, that's not what you want. You want him to play and want him to use his instincts of the game. So I thought he did a great job of that in that game, and he also got others involved, but he was in such a rhythm where you don't mind him having that type of effort.
Bruce Bowen, our NBA analyst, joining us here all night on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. Jeff Rickard sitting in for Jason Smith. Another series we have to talk about. I don't know about you. I had written the Boston Celtics off in this first round. I really thought Miami was going to beat a team that had looked old and uninspired. And, man, have I been wrong. They worked Miami badly the other night. What has impressed you about the Celtics in the first two games of that series?
Well, being that somebody goes down, that's when it's time for others to step up. And you never know who it's going to be, but you have to be ready for whenever you have that opportunity. I was really happy to see Ray Allen do it, especially with the first outing he had in game one. And also Glenn Davis, being able to contribute after a year of turmoil as far as coming back from a thumb injury and all the other things as far as not getting a lot of minutes. So I was really pleased to see that. But more than anything else, Miami Heat. Dwayne Wade is definitely a star, but you have the number 2 pick in Michael Beasley there, and he hasn't begun to contribute yet. I mean, he's been in the league now 2 years, and he hasn't did anything. So it's worrying for me that, you know, you've invested a lot in this young man, and he still hasn't been able to bring that scoring mentality and the things that he did in college.
Very quickly, Bruce, earlier today we found out that Scott Brooks is going to be the NBA Coach of the Year. Any problems with a guy who engineered the greatest one-season turnaround for a franchise in the history of the NBA?
No problem at all. It's well-deserved. Scott Brooks, he's been a guy that had to fight for so much in his career as far as playing in a division. He played for the Fresno Flames. I'm from Fresno, California, and this was a 6'5 and under league. And so I was really happy to see that he continued to follow his dreams of even playing professional basketball, no matter where it took him. And now he's a head coach and deserved Coach of the Year.
And it's been a good day for guys with the last name of Brooks. As a matter of fact, Aaron Brooks of the Houston Rockets is tomorrow going to be named the most improved player of the year. How impressed were you, Bruce, with his play all season long?
Well, he was very impressive. I'm glad to see that he received that most improved player of the year because he put in a lot of work. You know, he didn't have Yao to deal with this year. He didn't have somebody that, you know, you can feed off of because players like Yao Ming, Tim Duncan, Shaq, Kobe and LeBron, they make life easier for other players. They allow average players to be even more special and above average. But when you take those guys away, they're not necessarily those top guys anymore. They're not playing above average. So for Aaron to do it without Yao, I was really pleased to see that.
Hey, Bruce, always good to have you around. You improve every time I talk to you, and you're already starting at a high level, so I appreciate you stopping by.
Man, no problem. I appreciate that.